Anybody ever had a hero, somebody you admired in life? When I was young, the Incredible Hulk was my hero. Still is. If you're going to pick an Avenger, it's got to be the Hulk. I'm just telling you. There's no debate. Sorry. I used to roll my pant legs up, and I had those cowboy shirts with the pearl buttons, you know, that would snap. And I'd pop, 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 and I'd run around the house. Rawr! Okay, I was 3, so, cut me a little slack. Also, like, the Fonz. Hey. That was Potsy. Potsy would say, sit on it. But the Fonz, he was always cool. He always had the right answer. He could always make the jukebox work with the little bump, Rode around a motorcycle, leather jacket. Hey, cool. I also am a fan of James Bond. Snappy dresser, always looking good, all right? Yeah, he always got the girl, always driving cool cars. Aston Martins and, James Bond, come on. Jaguars and, good stuff, right? When I got married, you get into zones in your life. Does anybody just like, you like certain things? I liked swing music when we first got married. Zoot suits and all that good stuff. I thought, hey, for our wedding reception, wouldn't it be cool if we had zoot suits and swing danced? That would be cool if I could dance. And then I also went to a very conservative Nazarene church where dancing was not allowed, right? So that didn't happen. No zoot suits, no feather in my hat, but that's okay. And also my soon-to-be wife said, no, we're not doing that. Yes. It gave me pause. But, all of those things. And I've had certain times in my life where I actually have a suit that looks very James Bond-like. I do. And boy, do I look good in it. All those things are neat and all, but, really, I don't want to model my life after James Bond. One, he killed people. That's the 00, I don't think that's part of what I want to be part of. And yeah, he got all the girls, but that's not really what I want either. I got the best one. You guys all have good girls, but mine's the best. And we've been kind of doing this Follow Christ series. And it says the student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like the teacher, right? And I've been kind of careful through this very long series, and it's long on purpose because we're trying to be like Christ, right? We're following Christ. We're trying to be disciples of Christ. And it's one thing to be, interested in characters out there, but the only one worthy of following is Jesus. And not just to be a student, because you can be students of many things out there, but to be a trainee in the fact that you're going to follow in their footsteps and be like them, Christ is the only prime example that is given that is worth following. Are you with me? So this is the last of this series. And there's one last thing that we're going to study in this series. But to be honest with you, Jesus is worthy of a lifelong study. Worthy to emulate. Worthy to begin to model yourself after. And as he comes and he enters into this this world, and he says things like, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. He's saying things like, there's a new way I want you to be. There's a new culture with which I want you to begin to live in. When you study leadership books and go to leadership classes and things like that, one of the things they teach you, if you're the leader of a business or a corporation or a church or whatever it is, what you're really trying to lead, model, example, people to follow is a culture with which that business or church or whatever it is you're leading needs to look like. So if you're a doctor and you have a doctor's office and you have employees and they each have their certain tasks, even in their certain tasks, there's still a general feel that you want people to feel when you come in that doctor's office. And Anna and I have talked about that several times and how she wants her, the front gal who welcomes you when you come in, that you feel welcome, that you feel like this is a comfortable, a safe place, and there's certain words I want you to use and certain words I don't want you to use when you talk on the phone to people. And so in this complex, the parking is horrendous during the week. And so people come into her office pre-anxious because they couldn't find a parking spot, or somebody nearly ran them over to get the parking spot before them, or that, and they're already pre-agitated. And so the girl in the front, her job is to make you feel comfortable and more at ease so that Anne can do her job in helping heal you. Is that okay? Did I do that okay? I mean, that's just one of the cultural things that she likes her office to be like. As a teacher, you know, you set up your classroom and you put pictures and posters on the walls that is theme-like, and you want as a teacher, your students come in and feel like in this classroom we are going to learn math because math is fun, or whatever, reading, or whatever it is that you're teaching. And you want to have a sense that we are your students in this learning place, and I'm your teacher, and I love you, and that you are cared for, and I'm going to do my best to help you grow in your mind. And you create a culture as the leader, as the teacher of your classroom. Or if you're a recruiter for a college, and you're going out representing that college has a feel, has a statement about who they are and who they are representing. And when you go out, you're representing that culture, that feel, that school, and you put your heart into the students that you're recruiting. And part of that is I'm here to watch out for you while you're here. I heard James say that this morning in Hope Builds. And I'll be praying for you. I'll be concerned about your care. This meeting right here is not just the only time. I'm not just here trying to grab your school dollars. I'm concerned about you as a person. You know, and that's part of the whole culture that the school is trying to represent. And you all see that in your work, in your fields of, you know, Tibish has been a school principal, and she hires teachers hired teachers that would work with her on the whole idea of what she wanted to present at this school. We are going to love children. We are going to teach children. And teachers that could come on board and have that same feel, that same culture with which the school she was trying to grow and be the best school in under her care. And many of you are business owners or worked under companies, done sorts of things. Those places have this culture with which they want you to operate in. So if you work for Bruno's Builders, we're not just building a house. We're not just fixing a leaky ceiling or putting a door in. This is somebody's home, and it means something to them. And when we walk in there, we are going to be courteous, we're going to be kind, and we're going to do our very best to keep in mind that this is your home and we're helping you to feel more relaxed, comfortable, better about your home. So home is a place of security, a place of comfort, and whatever we do there, it's going to be the best. And if something breaks down, we're going to come fix it. If we broke something, we're going to replace it, or whatever it is. And there's a culture with which I want those guys that work under me, you're always going to speak honestly about it. If you happen to hear something on the news and you see something in the person's house that is opposing that, you're not going to bring it up. Just shut your mouth about whatever you feel about politically or otherwise. We're working on somebody's home. Now, if they bring it up, then... No, just... And Jesus comes and he says, there's a whole new culture, lifestyle, way of being, way of speaking, doing, and it's kingdom of heaven ways, and watch me as I do it. And eventually, after they've spent years with Jesus, about 3 years, he goes, okay, now I want you to go and do likewise. Right? And so this whole time, we've been talking about following Jesus. We are trainees. That was the word we started out. If you remember way back, 10, 11, 12, a year ago when we started. No. We're to be trainees, watching carefully how the master acts, reacts, speaks, talks, moves into people's lives, and do likewise. I got to tell you, as in general, the church has not been very good at this. And they have not placed me king over all the churches yet. But God has given me this one. And I want to present to you Jesus. Everything has to start with Jesus. Everything we do has to start with Jesus. Everything we say has to start with Jesus. Everything we are and how we respond to others around us has to start with Jesus. And so that's what my goal has been. And so as we study today, I want to talk to you about something that Jesus did. And there was a time when Jesus started inviting people. And so when you invite people, you come up with a guest list. Get it? You see where I went there with that? I found that picture I talked about last week. This is by Caravaggio. And this is a picture depicting Jesus calling Matthew, or sometimes called Levi. He was called Levi first, and Matthew was the name Jesus called him. In the dark there, but the light is behind him. At the table, there's Matthew with a surprised look on his face and like, me? You're calling me? You're asking me? And if you look, the room is dark, but the direction Jesus wants him to go is full of light. I just love that how they did that. When I had to take that that art and history course in school, I thought, oh boy, this is great. But I ended up really enjoying it and loved watching how the painters tried to tell stories in all their paintings. But this is Jesus calling Levi. And do you know what, or Matthew, do you know what Matthew did? He was a tax collector. And something I noticed the other day, every time that tax collectors are mentioned, it's always tax collectors and sinners. They're kind of wrapped up in that same boat, but really, if you call a tax collector a sinner, it was a real insult to the sinners. I mean, tax collectors were hated. I mean, hated. Because they were Israelites, Jews, who were brought into the Roman government system to tax their own people. And the way they made money, they were given every privilege they could to tax as much as they wanted to whomever they wanted to. As long as they made their quota and gave to the Roman government so the Roman government can do their wars and conquer and all that stuff. And tax collectors did pretty well. And all they had to do was give up everything that it meant to be part of the culture that they grew up in and lived in. They had to live hated and even labeled worse than sinners. And so Jesus comes and he says, after this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi, that's Matthew, okay, sitting at his tax booth. He said, follow me. Jesus said to him, and Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. He left everything before to become a tax collector, but when Jesus calls, it was worth giving all that up. And then what's interesting is what happened after. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus and his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors, a large crowd of tax collectors, and Jesus as guests of honor. And others were eating with them. Others is those sinners. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, who belonged to their sect, complained to his disciples. They didn't even bother. They weren't even going to go in there and talk to Jesus. So they mentioned to the disciples, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Now, let me explain something a little to you. When you would go into a banquet and you would eat with somebody, it's not prim and proper like you see it. I don't know if you guys know my mom, but she is the most prim and proper lady I have ever met, right next to Grandma Cletus, who I'm sure is setting tables for Jesus in heaven currently. But the plate goes right, the forks go in a certain order, the knife, spoon, and fork, you have to have the knife pointing towards the plate, not away from the plate, because that means you're welcome. There has to be the cup set right at the right position. You adorn the center of the table with some sort of decoration to make sure everybody feels happy, you know, prim and proper. It wasn't exactly like that back in Jesus' day. You didn't all get your own plate, forks, and silverware. No, you got bread was put out there, and it was usually flat bread, not fluffy like this. And you ate with everyone. Like, you just dipped right in. And so did the guy next to you. There's a little cream cheese here on your bread. And did you see that? I just double dipped. Now, I know some of you are non-double dippers, and you would just rather have your own bowl, right? I mean, think like when you go to the Mexican restaurant and they put that bowl of chips out there and like just one cup of salsa, because somebody else might dip into that with me. You ate with them. So double dip and you get your food. Sorry, I'm doing that on purpose. But you ate with one another. And your hands were on that bread and here, have some. And you'd tear it and share it around and you'd dip right in that bowl of whatever it was, likely something like a hummus or some sort of really good dip that you ate with. Sorry, I got too much bread in my mouth. And you passed around the cup and everybody drank together. It was eating with. Now, the Pharisees were, this was just beyond what they could stand. I've been watching a little detective show lately, The Defective Detective Monk. Anybody ever seen that? He is afraid of everything under the sun. You know, I'm like, germs, and he can't even see the toilet seat up. Like, you know. But the Pharisees believed that when sinners or tax collectors were walking about, that even the sin that was on them would get into the dirt, and as they walked around, as you walked in that same dirt, that you were in danger of being contaminated with the same sin as those guys. And so there were, as you walked in the room, there were ritual jars of purification that you would wash a certain way with, and and you would have a servant wash your feet because, you know, they're just servants after all. Right? And so what they're complaining about is Jesus. You're eating with those tax collectors and sinners, which means their hands touched that food and their mouth and all that stuff, and you're in the same bowl and the same cup. Jesus, don't you know what you're doing? You are putting all that sin on you. Are you hearing me? And this isn't even the first time Jesus has done this. And Jesus says to them, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners to repentance. You know, there are certain times as you grow in Christ, you begin to buddy up with other Christians because you guys are walking on the same path. And there are times in your life when that ends up being the only people that are in your life, and you begin to exclude those who are not like you. But one of the things Jesus did is he ate with the tax collectors and sinners. And so, just a question I want to ask you. Who's on your guest list? Who's sitting at your table? And don't get me wrong. I have the same issue because I like you guys. And I love going out to eat with you guys. And actually, I've discovered that there are certain times in my life is when you guys are the only ones I'm concerned about, and I don't have somebody else in my life that I say, hey, come along with me. Let me show you a new way. Let me talk to you about how this Jesus character changed me. But there are some times when that is, you know, when you ask me, oh yeah, I've got this guy, that guy, and this guy. Right now I do have a guy in my life that I'm working on. Who are you working on? I'm just asking. Rhetorical, I mean, it's my turn to preach. But who have you invited into your life to show this way that Jesus' way was? Well, okay. Section number two, lost things. So this is Jesus, and he's talking to these guys. This is his reply to those guys who are asking him, how in the world can you go in just into that place and eat with those tax collectors and sinners? I love it. Still cracks me up that there's two categories for that. So he says, now, the tax collectors and sinners were all gathered around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered. Don't you love mutterers? And this is Mother's Day, so I mean, I don't know what it is about mothers, but mothers always hear muttering. I don't know what it is, but they can always hear it, especially when you're in trouble and you turn around to walk away and you're muttering. They hear you. They'll call you out. Don't you go walking away muttering about this, that, or the other, right? See, I knew our children weren't the only ones. So he talks about sheep. I thought that was a good picture. And he's talking to him. He says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous ones who do not need to repent. And then he tells a story about a lost coin. He says, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of angels and of God over one sinner who repents. And then he tells a story about a son who was lost, who squandered everything his father had given him, and finally comes to his senses and thinks, "My father has been good to even to the servants, and if I could just go home and serve my father, that would be better than the mess I've made of myself." And while he was still a far, long way off, he saw him coming home, and the father went out and met him and embraced him. And he says, "Bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine that was dead is alive again. He was lost and is found." And so they began to celebrate. You see, it's always interesting when you're one of the one among the fold looking out at those who are lost. But Jesus had a heart for those who were lost. And I got to say, the majority of the Israelites were in a bad place at this point in time. They had been through a horrendous centuries of good kings and bad kings that ended up being more bad kings in the end, to where they were, they had no kings at all. They're in captivity. They're ruled by the Roman government. And even their very own has joined up with the Roman government so that they could steal money from them. And Jesus arrives and says, "There's a new way." So our third section I want to talk to you about is the view from the tree. So Jesus was traveling from Galilee. Galilee is that area way up at the top of the map there. This is a big overhead view. That's the Sea of Galilee. And as you come down the Jordan River and follow down, you see Jericho there on his way to Jerusalem. So this story that we're going to go talk about takes place as Jesus is heading into Jerusalem. He has done his Galilean ministry and is heading back down the Jordan River through Jericho and into Jerusalem. Do you know what happens when Jesus comes back into Jerusalem? We just came through Easter. Jesus is going to give his life up for all those who are lost. But he stops in Jericho, and as he's in Jericho, there was a tax collector, and it says it was a chief tax collector. His name was Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus had heard that Jesus was going to come through town, and he wanted to go see him. And apparently Zacchaeus was a short guy. If you remember growing up into the church anywhere, he was a... I knew you guys would know that. So he climbs up into the sycamore fig tree so he could see Jesus when he comes in. And when Jesus reached that spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. You're going to host me," he says. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. And I remember, I grew up in the church from day one. I don't know any other life other than church life. And I remember all sorts of stories about Zacchaeus, but this one sermon kind of struck me. And I don't even think it was the pastor. I think it was a guest speaker. But I can't remember. But I remember the 3 points. You know, every good sermon's got to have at least 3 points, right? And it was about Zacchaeus. Jesus came and he saw Zacchaeus up in the tree. He says, "You're going to host me." The points were, he sees me. He knows me. He called him by name. Zacchaeus, and he wants me. He sees me, he knows me, and he wants me. And Jesus came down, or Zacchaeus came down, and he threw a banquet, and there Jesus is in the midst of all of those tax collectors and... like Jesus, in good fashion, whenever he's being hosted, he actually always assumes the role of the host. And he takes the bread. Our Father, blessed art thou, Lord God. And he breaks the bread as it's blessed. And he shares it. And Jesus becomes the host because he's welcoming you back in. And he says to those Pharisees and Sadducees around you, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. And so I wonder, who's sitting at your table? Who have you spent time with? Who is your heart longed out for? See, it's all great when it's somebody else, but on occasion, there are very good Christians that stumble. And you think to yourself, what in the world was I thinking? How did I get in this mess? How did I let my life get so far away from Jesus? I got an idea. Follow along with me a little bit here. You have to use your imagination a little bit. So Jesus is coming into town. He texts you, says, hey, I'm looking. You know, work with me. Yeah, Jesus knows how to text. He says, I want to meet you for coffee. Great. Listen, I have a breakfast just before. Why don't you come meet me right after that breakfast meeting, and we'll have coffee together. I want to talk with you and sit with me. And so you talk to the thumbs up, I'll be there, or whatever. I mean, and you show up at 8:10. Now, even though the meeting was 8:15, it's Jesus. You don't want to be late, right? So you show up at 8:10, and you pull into the parking spot, and you can see right through the restaurant window, and there Jesus is with his previous deal, and you think, oh, I'll just wait here, except then you notice who Jesus is meeting with. It's that guy. It's that guy that dated your sister and ruined her life. He's meeting with him? I mean, that guy's a jerk. Does Jesus know what he did to my sister? Yes, he does. She's still hurt. She's still broken. Or Jesus is sitting with my boss, my former boss, the one who fired me because he couldn't get the job done and blamed it on me and canned me. And Jesus is meeting with him. How in the world am I supposed to go in there and sit in that same booth where that guy was with Jesus? I mean, after all, it's like pulling up there and there, and you look through the window and Jesus is there sitting with the tax collectors who just robbed you of a year's worth of wages. And it kept you from feeding your family properly. It kept you from you had to fire your workers. It ruined your business, that tax collector. And Jesus is there sitting with them. Are you hearing me? And there Jesus is, sitting at the table. He dips his bread right in the same bowl. I mean, same bowl as that guy. Do you know the words that came out of that guy's mouth? We don't call it potty mouth for nothing. But these were the ones that Jesus came to seek for. These were the ones that Jesus watched for. These were the ones that were hurting and broken. In fact, they are so broken, they act that way with your sister, as a boss, as a tax collector. And he says, listen, I'm spending time with you because you are still redeemable. You see what he's doing? He says, you're not lost. You may think you're lost, but I've come here to bring you back. You don't have to stay out there. You don't have to stay in the muck and the mire and the pig pens of life. come with me. I will gladly welcome you back into the arms of God, where there's blessing and goodness and righteousness and truth. Don't stay out there. Come eat with me. You see, it wasn't Jesus who was worried about their sin rubbing off on him. It was Jesus who was going to rub off on them. You see, it doesn't go the other way around. And listen, you guys, some of you teens are going, great, hey, Pastor talked about having friends who need to be saved. All my friends are that way. Pastor said so. Before you go and tell your mom that's what Pastor said, realize that you're the one that's supposed to rub off on them, not them on you. You're the one who's supposed to speak joy and happiness and truth and righteousness on them. When you get into that crowd of friends and all they do is gripe and complain about everything else out there, you be the one who speaks joy. You be the one who speaks hope and happiness. You be the one that rubs off on them, because you have the heart of Christ within you. It's Christ who infects the world, not the world who infects Christ. And as followers of Christ, as you become more and more like him in all that you say and do and walk and live and talk, as you become more and more like him, you are the infectors of the world around you. So when you look out into the world and you see that there's real problems out there, stuff that you don't like, and I know there are things that you don't like. You tell me about it all the time. I get emails from you. I get Facebook posts all the time. And I know you are very displeased with the way the world is going. So be ever so careful in how you respond to the world. Don't let the world infect you and speak ugliness back to the world. Be the heart of Christ in the midst of the ugly world. Speak truth. Speak joy. Speak happiness. Speak hope. Speak love. And be hope, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness. What's that last one? Oh, I hate that one. I pulled you right into that one, didn't I? This is who we are, children of the King. And as children of the King, we are to be like the King. I try to do my very best to example before my children a man of God. I am not always perfect at it. And for that, I apologize to my children sometimes. But I hope that more times than not, I can live out a good, godly life before you, that you can see what it's like and know that it is good and right and true. And I do the same with each and every one of you. But listen, don't follow me. I'm a pretty good guy. I'm not too bad. Just ask me, I'll tell you. But please know I'm doing my very best to follow Christ and to be like Christ. And so, as you look at me, follow who I'm pointing to, Jesus Christ. Be good Christians, Christ ones in this world. Study him. Train under him. Watch him. Watch what he says. Watch what he does. Watch how he acts and reacts in the world. And do likewise. And then you will be like the teacher. Amen?